Hello, and here we are again for another little chat, though it's just me at the moment because I am indoors, because I can't really record outside today or yesterday because both days have been rather rainy, and at the moment as I look out the window, it is absolutely tipping it down. It's been pouring down the rain all day, so I thought I'd better do a recording inside. It's also the first one after a little gap because I've been away for a couple of weeks. Been down to Dorset, which is a county that's right next to Devon. But you know, when something's right next to you on your doorstep, you don't always go and appreciate it. But over the last 20 odd years, I've only been to Dorset a couple of times. But we decided to go and have a bit of a beachy holiday down on the Isle of Portland, which is a kind of funny little place because it's a connected island, or tethered island, I think is the technical term. So it's a bit of an island, but it is connected by a causeway with a really long beach called Chesil Beach, famously. It's sort of quite well known. There's even a book and a film called On Chesil Beach, and the beach is 18 miles long, a big long pebble beach. Very few people on it, a handful of people on it, and certainly when we were there. And, you know, here we are back in the post-holiday gloom of rain and grey skies. But we were so lucky for 2 weeks. We were in sunshine and going around swimming in the sea and getting tanned. And, you know, it really quite unheard of in this country, it seems, that it should be so nice in September. But we're out there at danger of getting sunburn and having to putting sun cream on. But here we are again. And back to picking up the reins. I really didn't do hardly any work while I was away, other than sort of receiving emails and things, keeping tabs on any messages and things that have been sent to me. So thank you very much if you've emailed or commented on the website or anything in that time. I've seen all those things, and that's always lovely to see. I've had some lovely messages from people, and also a few new supporters over on the coffee.com site, which is very wonderful as well, that people are still supporting me, and that's really helping. You know, there's always costs in putting together books, and these things do make a difference. So thank you very much to all of you who've done that, or if you're thinking about it, or if you supported in some other way. As I always say, you know, I'm not in the business of expecting money from people at all. It's, you know, it's great if somebody can afford it and they feel they want to do it, that's wonderful. But otherwise, just having you around is fantastic. Having you read the books, listen to these things, chats, read things on the website and so on. Enjoy the pictures. You know, that's all there for you for free, and will continue to be that way. I will be posting up lots of pictures soon. Again, there's been a bit of a gap on the website because it was difficult to keep on top of that, because I've got lots of photos, but they're on different cameras and in different places and things. So I will find some nice ones and share those with you. So you can see what this beach looks like. So yeah, it was interesting and quite funny. I think anything that's any sort of small community on a small island type place is interesting to me. Really quirky little place. And I have to say, I mean, I often go to somewhere and think, oh, this would be a great setting for a Devonshire mystery, you know, a bit like I did with Newquay. I mean, I just had to do that, having spent a few days in a hotel in Newquay, I had to set something there. And really, this would be absolutely fantastic. It's a very atmospheric place. Considering it's small, there's lots and lots of quarries because Portland stone was highly valued. And I think St. Paul's Cathedral and a few other major places in London being built with Portland stone. And it was sort of well used for, it's a very fine stone, so it's well used for carving and headstones on graves and things like that. And there were still working quarries there, and you could still sometimes hear the clunk of machines, and everything seemed to have a bit of dust on it. You know, the car came away very dusty, and I think that's possibly to do with quarrying going on. And lots of abandoned quarries there now, of course, or ones that are being used for other things. There are some sculptures in one, and so on, where you can walk around with, you know, useful wildlife places or butterfly places and things like that. And there's also a prison on there. I believe it's not actually used as a prison now, but more to do with as a detention centre. But there's some amazing old buildings there. I don't know if they're Victorian, somewhere around there, perhaps. Great big stone buildings, huge stone walls with sort of razor wire on the top. If you go past those, want to have a look past those. So quite an atmospheric place. There's very rugged cliffs. Southwest coast path goes along the cliffs. Quite worryingly in places, no safety rail, no fence or anything. And you sort of get this drop down to the rocks below and the waves crashing. And lots of things like that. There's a lighthouse. Well, there are actually three lighthouses, but there's one currently in use, famously at Portland Bill. And we went up there. That was quite interesting, the history of that place. Lovely traditional red and white lighthouse, still used, though, with a modern LED light now. And you can pay and go and have little tours of it. So all these things were really feeding my imagination. And I don't know if it's going to be a Dan and Alan story or if it's going to be a separate story or not, but it's such an atmospheric little place. And, you know, obviously it'll have to wait until after I've finished the book that I'm working on. I mustn't sort of go off on too much of a tangent, but you know, you start to get ideas, you start to think about things. I thought the same thing actually last year. I went to Haworth in Yorkshire, the connection with the Brontes, went to the Bronte Museum there, and that is a lovely, quiet little village in part. There's sort of modern parts as well, which aren't quite as salubrious. And that's the same all over, isn't it? Really, well, it is here anyway. You often find that. You get these lovely old stone places, and of course everybody can't live in all these little stone cottages. They need for modern housing and so on. And it's such that new houses and higgledy-piggledy houses are built all over places. So, you know, that's progress, I guess. So, yeah, I must admit I had quite a lot of thoughts about last year after a holiday, after a week up in Haworth, that... I would be a wonderful place, especially with the Bronte connection. It just seemed like a really interesting thing with Alan being a writer. And I you know, we spent a bit of time, Mrs. C and I, that's Sue. We spent quite a bit of time chatting over possible plots, actually. And some of them I foolishly didn't write down and promptly forgot afterwards. But I do try and jot things down, record them. I often think I'm going to remember something, and then I don't until much later. You know, it suddenly comes to me in the shower. It does feed into this question that a lot of people have about where do ideas come from? And you know, the world is absolutely full of ideas. It's so easy to come up with ideas. It seems like it's going to be hard, but it really isn't. Because you only have to look at something and start asking yourself questions and start using a bit of imagination. And even the most mundane setting could trigger some kind of idea. Because people are interesting, aren't they? People are varied and complex, and they have all kinds of things going on in their lives. So, you know, you could look at an ordinary little house somewhere in a town, and all kinds of things could happen there. Could be love stories, could be romances, could be horror stories, could be ghost stories. You could imagine any number of things happening in what is seemingly an ordinary little house, especially if you think about it over time, you know, and you start to think what stories have these walls seen. So yeah, I'm going to have to try and be quite disciplined and hold off on that for the moment. Whether the Haworth one will ever come into being or not, I don't know. Whether this Portland one will, I don't know. We'll have to see. Sometimes what I do is kind of sketch out just scribbled notes, really, about ideas, about where the story could go and see if it can go anywhere at all. Because if you can't scribble down a few ideas, that's a bad sign. It kind of means it probably doesn't have as much potential as you might think. I do tend to sort of dive into things with both feet. I'm a bit of a fool to myself, really. I could probably go a bit faster if I plan things out better, but it kind of goes against the grain, and I do a bit of planning, a bit of writing, a bit more planning, a bit of thinking. As a writer, I tend to think. And you get to the point where I don't know whether it's experience or instincts or some combination of the two, but I kind of get a bit of an itch about things if they're not feeling right in the story, if I feel it's lacking something, if it's lacking some kind of interest. Does it need some more characters? Does it need something, another dimension adding? Is there some complexity that could be put in there? Is it already too complicated? Does it need simplifying? I do tend to make things fairly complex. Fortunately, I think that suits me quite well to mystery readers, because they tend to like things rather complex. it's almost like the more complex, the better. You know, I think those of us who love mysteries kind of like that challenge. We sort of, you know, maybe we look at crossword puzzles and things like that, and we don't like the easy ones. We like the hard ones, even though they sort of drive us a bit potty. I'm not very good at the cryptic ones. My dad was a demon at those. He could do those pretty quickly. I haven't really been initiated into that. I can, if I stare at one for long enough, I can usually manage a couple of them. And I think that takes practice, but that's kind of by the by. See what I mean about just enjoying the challenge of these things? And putting together a novel-length mystery is quite a challenge, actually. It has a number of challenges as you go through, because you've got the sort of character aspects that you've got to develop. You've got the plot, which has to be done hand-in-hand with that character development. In my opinion, anyway, I think the two need to go together. You've got the sort of setting and the scene. You've got the context of the real life setting. So it depends kind of when you set it and how realistic it is. You know, if you're writing other things, like I've done quite a bit of sci-fi, then you have to be consistent within that context. So if you've set up certain technologies, you have to stick to that. Even in the humorous sci-fi that I did in the Brent Bolster series, which I must get around to relaunching at some point because it seems to be languishing a bit. But, you know, there were technologies in there, and I wrote notes about all of them and made sure that things were consistent. And yes, they're all imagined in a sci-fi way that you can, you know, have transporters taking you from one place to another in the blink of an eye, which we all know isn't real. But if you do that, then it has to be done in a consistent way. It's the same with mysteries, although the ones I write are contemporary, so they are fairly easy to keep tabs on in terms of what can and can't happen. You do still have to be consistent. So, like a lot of people, I decided not to have the pandemic happen in Embervale. It seemed to me that was an escapist kind of fiction, and the last thing anybody wanted to read about when we're in the depths of all that stuff was people having to wear masks and avoiding each other, which would have made it quite hard to tell a mystery story. If people had to stay away from each other and, you know, everybody was sitting at home, that would have been quite difficult. Can be done, and I have heard it done. I had a radio drama that was set during the pandemic, and it was quite interesting. They were talking about looking at CCTV, because it was a police drama, and they couldn't really tell very much because everybody was wearing masks. But anyway, I have to be consistent to that. I decided not to use it, and now I cannot reference it, so I have to be careful with that. But, you know, hopefully the stories will stand the test of time and that won't matter, and I think it's just as well. I don't really go in much for referencing real people or real events in my books. Again, that is a deliberate decision. I think it would kind of make me a bit of a hostage to fortune. Because you never know. I mean, say you referred to somebody and then, you know, something later came to light about that person, you know, could be a bit worrying, or about a real situation, you know, in the news or something. I tend not to do that. So there may be things that influence it. So, for instance, in the email adventure, Death at Blackingstone Rock, there was quite a bit of snow around the year that I set that and the time that I set that. So I just exaggerated it a bit and I made the snow worse and so on. You know, so you can use things. I used the VE Day in, which one is it? It must be Mystery in May, surely. I'm sort of getting muddled up with my own stories now. Yeah, I'm sure it was in because it was a May holiday. And that was a bit of a mixture that the VE Day celebrations, or the anniversary, was it the 50th? Sorry, I'm getting in a muddle now. No, what am I talking about? Anyway, it was an anniversary of VE Day and there were street parties planned, but they didn't actually happen because the pandemic, well, in Embervale, they went ahead. So I was referencing a real date, but in a changed kind of way. So, yeah, ideas come to the novel from a variety of places. It's interesting, I think, how fiction that I experience one way or another, whether it's on TV or through books or radio dramas and so on, do kind of fire up my imagination a bit. I have worried that I might get influenced by something and then accidentally include something which could seem similar to something else. It's kind of a bit of a worry that we might plagiarize something, I think, when we're writing. But I find for me it doesn't kind of work like that. It's more that I might watch something. So I've been watching, say, for example, the BBC drama Vigil, set in a nuclear submarine. And there are lots of things about it that I liked. And then I go away and I kind of think, what did I like about that? And why did I like it? And then there are other things that I didn't like. I won't give any spoilers, but especially the last couple of episodes, I felt rather fell down. And it's quite interesting to think how, as a viewer of that, I felt a bit disappointed. And it helps me to think, you know, how can I do things that don't disappoint readers in turn? Because we don't want to do that. So, you know, it's not that I'm going to suddenly go and write a story in a submarine or sort of slightly change it to being on a ship or something, because that's not going to happen at all. But it just kind of feeds in to my sort of internal filters, I guess we could call them, about what's good and what's not so good, what to do, what to avoid. And it could be in terms of characters being realistic, for instance, or what happens in a story to make a character seem more rounded and more fully developed. Also, I do think I tend to notice the cliches and the tropes that keep coming up. Kind of two schools of thought on this, that some people say, oh, you've got to give readers what they want and just stick to the old tropes. You know, and every detective has to have the sliver of ice in his heart, whatever it is that people say. Was it splinter of ice? I think it's a splinter of ice. I can't remember who said that now. And I think that can all be laid on a bit too thick. Yeah, I think people have got to be interesting. I think perhaps, say, being a detective might really take it out of you. It's obviously a job that that lends itself to kind of marital discord and so on, I would imagine. Having a stable family life must be difficult when you have to deal with the bad things that people do and work on sociable hours and so on. But I think the sort of tropes can get a bit tired after a while. And it's kind of choosing a line to steer where you like to give a character some sort of development, but you have to go with your best ideas. Back when I was teaching, so years ago, I was a primary school teacher, and I tried to train kids to make their writing better. I always used to tell them, don't always put your first idea, put your best idea, because it's often easier than sitting here struggling, thinking, what should I write, just to sort of blast stuff down and say, okay, I'm going to blast down three ideas here. And then you just blast them down and you don't feel too committed to them. So you do that. And then you think, okay, which of those is best? You know, do I need to carry on blasting down? Do I need another three? And then you go with your best ideas. And I kind of do this right down to the sentence level. I would probably write faster if I didn't do this, but I do rewrite things as I go quite a lot, because you don't really know how it's going to look until you see it in front of you. So what I will do is I will sort of be typing away and I'll be constantly changing it and restructuring sentences until it just kind of sits right with me. And that's quite a slow way of writing, I guess, but it's the way I work. And I do that, and then later on I will rewrite again several times to different degrees, depending on how good it is, what's missing, how it flows, and so on. I really like to get my writing to flow. But anyway, this is turning into a bit of a sort of a lecture on writing, which is not the intention of this. That's the danger of me sitting at my workspace instead of yomping around in the fields. But just to let you know what's sort of going on, I am very much trying to get back into the swing of things. I am working on a little short story for a separate project, which is not connected to the mysteries. at all. And if I can get that done and dusted fairly quickly, it's quite a sort of dark short story, which I've seen somebody was asking for, submissions for an anthology. If I can get that done quickly enough, I will then go back straight back to the current Devonshire Mystery, which is set mainly in and around Exeter. But if this short story is proving too much of a distraction, I'll have to just put it aside because it caught my imagination and I felt like having a go at it. But I really, you know, I have readers out there waiting for stuff and, you know, I owe them something, I think, and I need to get on and crack on the story. And I thought I'd be tapping away at the novel or the short story, actually, while I was away, and I just didn't because, you know, sometimes you need a rest and you need to spend time with family. And that those things are very important. That's kind of what underpins everything. You need to have those moments, those fond memories, because we all spend plenty of time working. We need a bit of a break sometimes, get recharged. And to remember what's important in life as well, I think. So had a lovely time, but now here we are. Skies are grey. It's definitely crashing into autumn. It's pouring with rain. I got absolutely soaked walking Lottie this morning, even though I was wearing sort of waterproof trousers, wellies and a waterproof coat. It still managed to come through. So I wouldn't say absolutely soaked. I mean, obviously, I was shielded a bit by my waterproofs, but the waterproofs weren't quite up to the job, I don't think. And it's going to happen again. So I'll have to put on my already damp waterproofs and trudge around soon. Because it's one of the things of having a dog, you've got to get them out. So it's good for me, I guess. So anyway, I have rabbited on for quite long enough. So yeah, another long ramble, I'm afraid. But thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for all your support and encouragement, your comments on the website, your support on coffee.com. And if you've been buying my books and letting your friends know that you like them, that is absolutely wonderful. Thank you very much. If you've posted reviews, thank you also for that. I know I keep saying this, but, you know, I never tire of saying thank you because I do genuinely feel grateful for all of those things and they do make a difference. And it does make my day when I get emails. And I must make sure that my postbox has been dealt with as well. I must get through and make sure I've replied to everybody. Because although I always read messages when they come in, I have to sit down and write replies at another time usually, because I tend to read them on my phone like a lot of us probably. Okay, so thank you very much and I will chat to you again soon. We should be back onto a weekly schedule now. And look after yourselves, take care, happy reading and bye for now.